Go.
Well, we're back.
We're back.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you as well, brother.
News has been crazy. I don't know if you saw, they asked Trump about Epstein. Did you see this?
No.
You didn't see this?
No.
Oh, this is the best.
Tell me more.
He just goes, are we still talking about that? Then he interrupted everybody. No. Like, this is crazy that we're still talking about Epstein. I mean, we have everything going on in Texas. We have such great news and bad news. And this is not where our energy should be right now.
Oh, my God.
So what do you think of that?
Wow.
That,
I mean, dude, this guy's the master spinner.
Talk about a rug pull.
Right?
I
mean,
I don't know what to say.
It almost makes you feel like the entire Biden administration was a setup for us to get all bought in. Like, this guy's going to change everything.
It's just the pendulum swing.
Sucker.
You have to have one side hate the other. And then the other side has to be able to say, like,
so is he going to rug us on Bitcoin?
I think he's going to
be like strategic Bitcoin reserve.
There's not going to be a strategic Bitcoin reserve.
You think it's dead?
I think that's kind of dead.
It seems to me that Bitcoin's the only thing he really likes because it supports the dollar.
It might be
the only thing that he follows through on.
I don't know. Maybe they like the licensing on the meme coins to begin. Maybe they got great licensing fees. Like, I don't know. I saw Donald Trump Jr. speak in Vegas.
The kids seem to like it.
They seem to like it. They seem to get it. They seem to understand that it's hard money. They talked about being debanked.
Yeah.
But everything going on with this Trump administration is the opposite of what he campaigned 100%. On, I think.
100%.
You know. 100%. And I think it's been kind of.
But how many diehard MAGA people, which I love a lot of them, I love you guys, but how many of you have realized this?
I don't know. I hope more people wake up. I mean, both sides are part of the same team that rug pull you. I think they drive each other crazy on purpose in public to rile up the people.
Just,
you know,
when you thought voting mattered.
Exactly. You know, and it doesn't mean some of the things you're angry about aren't real, like that elections might be rigged 100%. Or, you know, there might be political persecution
proof.
In
it's
the
more
system.
Proof and we get sucked. People get sucked in every time.
Every time.
Every time.
So I think with that, we should introduce the show. Let's is Bitcoin Center.
This is Bitcoin Center. I'm Paul Tarantino.
I'm Cedric Jungleman. And this is it. So, Francis, if you can roll the intro, we'll get into the first topic.
All right. So, 80,000 ancient 14-year-old Bitcoin moved. And the question, Cedric, is who is it and why now?
You know, there's been a lot of guessing, and I think it's kind of I think it's a little petty for us to be guessing, but I'm like a sponge. I heard a lot of people. Somebody said that it was 99.9% Roger Ver. I think that's possible that Roger still has a lot of his wealth in Bitcoin.
Sure.
Mandrick even tweeted online that he wouldn't be surprised, but we have no real proof. You know, some people said maybe this was Elon Musk buying it on the private market.
What is the status on Roger's court case with the IRS?
I don't know what his status is. I think he's still fighting probably for his life to be extradited.
Or would this be a move to liquidate to pay taxes? And
see, that's also the coins moved, but they didn't go to an exchange. This could
went to another address.
This could be a security upgrade.
Right.
Wallet upgrade.
Yeah, it could be a nothing.
Multi-sig wasn't around.
For sure.
Certain security measures weren't around.
Yeah.
So this could just be a move. You know, something else I saw that was very interesting. Two things. One,
that's a great point. That could be happening because you get these reports all the time. But if you have that many coins and you're looking around in the world at the $5 rent tax that are happening, mm-hmm. you'd be like, yeah, let's upgrade this shit immediately.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be moving stuff as well.
Yeah. Two other things I thought were very notable. The wallets that the coins moved from, I believe all were created on Jack Dorsey's father's birthday. That was interesting. That's a different rabbit hole. But I thought the more notable date here was that this happened on July 4th. So was this a call to freedom or to action of some sort? You know, so was the move made on July 4th to signify something? You know, that to me was very interesting that it happened on July 4th.
So the wallet was created on Jack Dorsey's dad's birthday.
Yeah, like several of the wallets. I think 8 of the wallets at the coins.
All created on that day.
Yes.
And then all moved on 4th of July.
Yes.
All wallets simultaneously.
14 years later.
Wow.
And it appears to be a miner's wallet, but we really don't know. I think we should jump to the next topic. Elon signals that his new America party will embrace Bitcoin. Paul, is Elon Musk a Bitcoin ally now?
I have no idea, I can't trust the guy. I've always had a hard time trusting Elon because he blows like the wind too. He was 100% hardcore Bitcoin, and then he went down the Doge rabbit hole. He does things like, you know, I'm for freedom and free choice, and then he's freaking wants to stick chips in people's brains.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what to think about this guy. I've always been impressed by him. I've never trusted him. I'm not sure if he really runs all his companies, because I don't understand how one human can run this many companies so successfully. So I don't know. You know, like, I could say he's a spook. I could say he's part of this whole agenda. I could say that the Trump Elon rift is all a setup. I have no idea. But just because but he does own Bitcoin, or Tesla owns Bitcoin. They sold part of it. They have the rest of it. They have something like 10,000 coins. I think he understands the value of Bitcoin. I think he's pissed off that he didn't create it. I think that's the bottom line, right? Probably more than anything, is that he tried to do something like this with PayPal and it didn't work. And then Bitcoin was created.
Well, you bring up PayPal, and he was at PayPal, like you said. And then, you know, very early on, the government, I think, told PayPal they can't accept Bitcoin. And so I would think that, you know, it had to be come on his radar then.
Yeah.
I mean, for someone, you know, he said the other day, fiat is hopeless, yet he has $38 billion on the balance sheet of Tesla. So, you know,
good point.
It's up and down with him. I think we'll do the next one.
The bull run. So look at, there's, and I don't even know who this was, but this, there's a lot of people out there just basically saying the bull run has just begun.
Yeah.
Right. But some people think it's just starting, but do you think it's actually over?
I think it's possible it's over. I do. I tend to think what I want. So I'm still optimistic. I'm going to admit that bias. Yeah. And I still think we're at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite possible. And I have to think, you know, I think as Bitcoiners, we should be thinking about our threat vector. And one threat vector is your balance sheet. And, you know, you should be prepared for not to have the liquidity at higher prices that you're hoping for.
I think we also have a little bit of PTSD from the last bull market.
Totally.
And, you know, we made this minor new high and then it collapsed. But, you know, I had a conversation today with British HODL and Nico. And, you know, they are in the same position. Like, it could go either way. Maybe we, like, scratch a new high, hit 120, and it's over.
Yep.
Or we could rip to 500.
Totally.
And all the news and all the metrics would point towards, why are we not at 200, 300 now, when there's just like massive, massive Bitcoin buys.
Yeah.
And the news is so bullish. So it's, it's hard to say. This is a weird cycle.
If the bull run starts after they lay all the groundwork for stable coins, does that benefit the United States government and the amount of treasuries they could sell?
Yes.
To have the bull run start after they lay all that ground.
That's been my
running thesis.
Me too.
That doesn't mean it's right. I wouldn't, you know, do any betting on that. But
I mean, if we really get this acquisitions coming, like, so they say that July 22nd, there's going to be an announcement, or Bo Hines was saying this, Matthew Pines has been saying this. July 22nd, there's going to be some sort of announcement of what our plan is to accumulate Bitcoin. So if that comes to fruition, that comes after the approval of the Genius Act. That kind of aligns with that thinking that they wanted to get the stablecoin legislation in position so that they could drive Bitcoin to drive treasury purchases and treasury bill purchases. And so this all could be playing out. This could just been the 7-month delay where traders are accumulating before we get the run.
And if you overlay this on 2017, I mean, we could still see a very fall and even a continuation into the spring of a bull run to 1 to 2 million in a weird scenario. Well, that's the next question, right?
Once we get to wherever we get in this top, do we have a 75, 85% collapse again? Or is this something different now where the accumulation just keeps happening? So we'll see.
We'll see. Next topic.
Interesting.
This is one. The one big, beautiful act passes in the U.S. Senate without the Bitcoin tax amendment, which we talked about and hope very hopeful for last week. Did they blow it here? Did the Senate blow it?
I mean, it would have been great if they got it through. I'm not some political analyst, so I have no idea what goes into why things make it in or don't. If they just ran out of time, if it was too much to ask for. But what I've been hearing from Senator Lummis and others is that they're going to continue this push, right? They're going to continue to fight for this. I think I heard Matthew Pines talk a little bit about this. I think he was saying something to the effect that whenever you're dealing with changes to the IRS code, it's hard to get these things done quickly.
I don't know if I buy that. I don't know either. I mean, they just get rid of taxes on tips whenever they want.
Good point. They can, writ large, say
student loans don't need to be repaid.
Right.
So
maybe they want to make sure that the stable coin stays in the POS system.
Yeah, I think it's also they don't want Bitcoin treated like money, and they're not going to go give out $300 tax free to Bitcoiners just yet because they could have fit anything in that bill.
It's ridiculous.
That's so de minimis in terms of what we're talking about.
Right.
So it just says they don't want that beachhead. That's a real firm no.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think a lot of the political campaigning around Bitcoin has just been to raise money more than to do these things per se. I don't know if these things are going to happen. I mean, talk about July 22nd, something's going to happen. We didn't get the audit of Fort Knox. We didn't get the audit of Bitcoin yet. So, you know, we're no longer allowed to talk about Epstein.
Now the rumor is at the Epstein files are because Trump is holding them hostage.
For his own power play. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
They
missed him in Bunker Hill with the pew pew shots, and now like they let him have all the files they want. Right. And he's going around telling everyone not to talk about it, as if that's the big master plan
to lull
them to sleep. All right, we gotta move on.
The PayPal. So I don't necessarily agree with this, but supposedly the PayPal mafia is the most influential architect of modern data.
Well, all right.
Do you agree with this?
I think there's something here, and I think what I was really, you know, kind of getting at here when I asked Francis to include this topic was Mark Goodwin had this tweet. So this says Peter Thiel never quite made it as a macro trader, right? And then you zoom out, he literally dollarized the internet with PayPal. And I think that's the point. Like PayPal really played a major role in bringing, I think, the dollar to the internet. And
yeah, I guess.
You know, it's sort of like
I barely used it. I used PayPal to process credit card payments.
Right.
It's like it wasn't really a digital currency of any
type. Not a currency, but
it was like the very first Stripe.
Yeah, exactly. Look at the people that came out of PayPal though. So now let's look at the mafia part of it. Reid Hoffman, he founded LinkedIn. So that's literally your professional identity.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean,
about
tracking
the mafia.
All that.
Right.
And then there's Peter Thiel, Palantir.
He gave the first
$500,000 to Facebook. So now you have like social identity. And you have Musk who owns Twitter now. So it's like you've literally like all social conversation and debate.
Yep.
These guys have their hooks in every single online persona data set.
Yeah, for sure. The mafia is.
Yeah. So I think it's
interesting. I wanted to say crime syndicate. That almost came out of my mouth, but probably not. They are definitely powerful, but I don't equate that with PayPal being powerful is my issue.
Sure. Yeah, no, not PayPal, but the people that came out of it and just what they laid, even with, I think, the evolution of PayPal.
Yeah, 100%.
So I think this leads us directly to, you know, talking about fintech. Knut von Holm was just on my show, Bitcoin Matrix. You've been on that show numerous times. And he said something along the lines of, I don't advise people to use Bitcoin as collateral. Mm-hmm. So we're going to run that clip in the Inside Bitcoin, in the Man in the Arena segment. And we'll have CJ Constantinos on to take the other side.
Then at a certain point, like, the books started taking off and the articles started taking off, and I figured there might be a way for me to actually make a living off of doing Bitcoin stuff. I never regretted that move. So, yeah, I don't advise people to take out mortgages with Bitcoin as collateral or to loan against their Bitcoins or something. It's like, but simplicity is key, I think. If you can have your stack and just wait till it's valuable enough and it came up the top, that's probably very good. Spend and replace. If
there he is,
CJ Konstantinos, hey, in the house. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me here. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Likewise. Well, I want to get into it with you. I mean, you just saw the clip or heard the clip from Knut. He's saying, you know, don't collateralize your Bitcoin for a mortgage. I mean, what do you say to that? What do you think?
Well, first off, I'd like to say I have the utmost respect, and I've read a couple of his books, and I'm actually a fan. But we do disagree on this point, and I think that's a misunderstanding. And I know he knows this, so I just don't know why he hasn't connected it. I think money and currency need to be understood as two different tools, right? Like, money is not currency, and currency is not money. When gold backed the system, and it was the collateral asset that backed those circulating liabilities, the paper was the currency. It was the medium of exchange. It was what increased velocity of the money, but the money was still the asset that sat in the bank that was the collateral. So money is a tool and currency is a tool. And we're in a unique position as Bitcoiners where we have accumulated what happens to be the best form of money the world has ever seen, and therefore the most pristine form of collateral the world has ever seen. So you can use money and currency together, like you would in a garden. If you have a shovel and you have a rake, there are two different tools to complete two different objectives. And what we have is, with Bitcoin as money, you have pristine collateral. Why? Because unlike a cash equivalent, over the life of the loan, the money is actually engineered to appreciate in value. So with a 5-year compounding annual growth rate of 60% and a 10-year compounding annual growth rate of over 80%, in the long run, Bitcoin is actually an auto deleveraging collateral. You could literally post Bitcoin as collateral, and as long as you eliminate price volatility liquidation risk, over the long period of time, the burden of your fiat denominated debt held against that pristine collateral will disappear, because Bitcoin will 10x in 5 years. So if you post $500,000 and you take $500,000 and buy your house, in 5 years, if Bitcoin maintains its CAGR, your $500,000 of collateral will now be worth $5 million. So $500,000 versus $500,000 to start at 1-to-1 versus 1/10 after just a 5-year period. What does that do? I hate making this comparison, but responsible savers of Bitcoin are going to be the new cantillionaires. We are printing purchasing power through the engineered design of our unit of account, and that's our money. And therefore, if we want to spend that money, if we want to unlock the purchasing power of that money without giving up ownership, you must use it as collateral. He said spend and replace. I think that works at the top of the S curve. I think that works when the ongoing transfer of wealth accelerates and then completes. And now we're at the top of the S curve, and the purchasing power of Bitcoin is more correlated to the global economy. So the purchasing power of Bitcoin can slightly increase with global economic growth and slightly decrease with contraction, but you're not on the precipice of one of the largest transfers of wealth that we've ever seen in human history. So for that reason, at this point in time, it makes sense to use money as a collateral. And when you want to increase your quality of life and standard of living, you borrow currency. So you have deflationary money acting as your collateral. You're borrowing inflationary currency. That fixed fiat denominated debt becomes an asset instead of a liability, because it's not backed by your time and energy. It's not backed by proof of promise, by credit, by circulating credit. It's a commodity credit. It's backed by the most pristine form of collateral in the world, 24/7, 365 liquid, 10-minute settlement times with transaction finality. No other asset is compared to Bitcoin as collateral. And therefore, as we move through the financialization of the asset class, I think it's going to become very common and evident for people to be using Bitcoin as collateral. One caveat, though, because the answer to the question, is it smart to borrow against your Bitcoin? The answer is actually yes and no. The answer is yes, because you can unlock your purchasing power without giving up ownership. But the answer is no, because depending on who your counterparty is, you could lose your Bitcoin. I love to point to the COVID example. If you were borrowing from a traditional lender through COVID and price goes from 10,000 down to 5,000, you're getting margin calls. If you tell yourself, you know what, I'm going to sleep on this tonight, or you know what, I'm going to put a little bit more out there to protect another 10 or 20%. And then overnight it goes from 5 to below 3,500. You've now just lost all the collateral you've posted. Right. It's not even your fault. It's just a global event that nobody could control. It's a liquidity event. And now it's gone. So in that case scenario, no, it's not worth it. But I think as the market matures and we go into V2, V1 being BlockFi and Celsius and FTX and all of the rehypothecation schemes we saw when fiat maxis came in here and tried to recreate the fiat system in the digital economy with absolute digital scarcity. Can't print Bitcoin. Didn't work. But as we mature the products and we have products like we see at People's Reserve, where we've removed liquidation risk, where we incorporate adjustable interest rates, you go back to that same scenario. The price goes from 10 to 5. Your interest rate goes up a little bit. It goes from 5 to below 35, your interest rate goes up a little bit. So for a couple months, you pay a higher payment. And then when Bitcoin bounces back up to 10,000, you're right back to where you started. Then when Bitcoin goes and puts new all-time highs, your interest rate is further decreasing, making their debt more affordable over the life of the loan. So to me, I mean, yes and no, but choose your counterparty wisely. Bitcoin are being respected as somebody who's been a responsible saver of the most pristine form of collateral in the world.
Yeah, CJ, I think we all agree with you is that, Newt is correct and that you need to be conservative in your approach. But it is wise to borrow conservatively against your Bitcoin because you can use it to your advantage. But I wanted to ask you another question that's whirling around X, which I'm sure you've seen, which is the issuance of your altcoin that's associated with People's Reserve. Tell us how this works. Explain your rationale behind the use of it, and see if you can change the Bitcoin mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. So I hate the term altcoin. I think altcoin is actually relevant for pretty much everything else in the industry because it was an alternative to Bitcoin. And that's just pure stupidity. Bitcoin is the wheel. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to compete with the wheel. Anything that tries to compete with Bitcoin is an absolute scam. But when you look at Michael Saylor's digital asset framework, and I look at MicroStrategy, and I say, you know what? I'm holding my shares for the long term in MicroStrategy because I think Michael's going to turn it into a central bank of the internet economy. And when you look at his digital asset framework, what does that mean? It means tokenized stable coins. It means tokenized oil and other commodities. It means tokenized utility tokens. So I wonder what they're going to do when Michael Saylor has his bank and is doing the same thing. Because our Bitcoiners, I thought this was this is a monetary revolution for people who just started. But when you've been in this long enough, you realize that if a small group of men can state the price of money, if a small group of men can tell you what it costs to borrow against your pristine collateral, that's not free market money. This is a financial revolution, not just a monetary revolution. Monetary revolution is level one. But we need a free market yield curve. We need interest rates that are based on the supply of money, the demand for loans, and counterparty risk. That's free market economics. You cannot have free market money when a small group of men can name the price of money. And I think it would be surprising that some Bitcoiners, I mean, for every one Bitcoiner that is saying, you know, you're stupid, what are you doing? I've gotten three or four messages that say, God bless you. We know what this revolution is about. We know what true freedom is about. How can people support the very system, the very fractional reserve system, the very entities that they point at and say are enslaving and manipulating the world? Now you're going to crawl back to them and beg them for a credit line? You're going to let them earn interest off of your savings? It doesn't make sense.
Explain, how does the People's Reserve coin work?
Yeah, so the People's Reserve coin is about loyalty and liquidity. And the first part is in our system, you're going to get the best interest rates. You're going to get discounted fees, participation rewards. I want to build a system that delivers value back to my loyal users, not that extracts value. It's the opposite of the fiat system. So that's the first part. The second part is liquidity. There are a limited amount of liquidity providers in the world who understand Bitcoin as a de-risking collateral, as a de-risking asset that auto deleverages you over the life of the loan. There's a reason that the interest rate is so high on Bitcoin, and that's because they view it as a risk on tech stock that you borrow against on margin. They do not view it as a pristine collateral, as an engineered money, as a savings technology. It's still magic internet money to them. So the PRN liquidity token, the PRN token acts as a way for us to raise liquidity. So when people buy the token, number one, they know they're getting the benefits of loyalty, which are, we like to say, don't speculate, calculate. You can literally calculate your economic benefits based on your loyalty level and which Bitcoin powered financial products you're using. And the second thing is being able to raise the liquidity just like a bank would in the free market banking era. In the free market banking era, this is why Michael Saylor's digital asset framework, you can launch a digital utility token, because these are not the cryptocurrency scams that have really crushed the industry. And that I have continuously come out and said, these are scams, get away from them, don't touch them with 100-foot poles. This is a new era, a redefinition of what crypto is. And as the money markets become 24/7, just like Bitcoin, notice how that conversation started taking place. All of these test nets, all these L1 test nets, you know where they converge? They converge on Bitcoin, but it's not there on Bitcoin today. We have to be on the test nets. So as everything converges to Bitcoin, you bet your ass PRN will be on Bitcoin, where if you're not holding it on our platform to get benefits and rewards, you can hold it in a self-custody wallet that's protected and secured by Bitcoin's proof of work. But we're just not there yet. The test nets, we're still in the experiment phase.
The benefits and rewards in the coin, is that associated with the interest that the borrowers are paying, or how does that work?
Yeah, so just, it really depends on what product you're using. So for instance, if you don't hold any tokens, we're still happy to work with you, but your starting interest rate on a Bitcoin powered mortgage is 10.5%. Vice versa, if you're Diamond, you're starting at 7.5%. And no matter what level you are, you can over collateralize and reduce your interest rate by 20 basis points for every 10% you over collateralize, maximum 200%. Basically, you can reduce your interest rate by 4 percentage points. So even at basic, you can get a Bitcoin powered mortgage at 6.5%. Today in the United States, prime is 7.5. So you can get prime minus. And if you're Diamond, you're at 3.5. You now have access to the cheapest cost of capital in the world for any home buyer, because you are a responsible saver of Bitcoin. And if we want to redefine Bitcoin as pristine collateral, then it starts with detaching from the traditional yield curve. You cannot build a business and marry it to the traditional yield curve and then go crawling on your knees to cantillionaires begging for a 7% credit line so I can flip it to you at 10 and 12%. No, read what Hal Finney said. Hal Finney said this way back about Bitcoin banks. Just please go read it. This guy's forgotten more about Bitcoin than most of us know or will ever learn. He might even be Satoshi. When he calculated market cap in his famous post, he used 20 million coins, not 21. How do you know those 1 million were never going to come back? He might even be Satoshi. Read what he said about Bitcoin banks. They will issue their own currencies. Right. Interest rates will fluctuate in a free banking era, and each interest rate at each Bitcoin bank will be different. And I think, you know, in the future, when you see People's Reserve as a central bank of the internet economy, and you see Michael Saylor's MicroStrategy as central bank of the internet economy, the interbank lending rate between MicroStrategy and People's Reserve, that will be the rate that is equivalent to today's federal funds rate. That will be the front end of the yield curve. And Bitcoin-powered financial products, whether it's mortgages or bonds or other types of products that spin out, they'll formulate the free market yield curve, a yield curve that is not stated, a yield curve that is not anchored, a yield curve that says, no, a small group of men cannot tell you what the price of the money is. Bitcoin is a free market money, but we need free market finance to make that happen. And the PRN token allows us to expand liquidity and expand our services at a much faster pace and clip than working with liquidity providers. Very few liquidity providers today understand that lending to a Bitcoiner is actually less risky than lending to the government. So being able to source the LPs that we have, plus having the PRN loyalty token, not only provide liquidity to the very Bitcoiners who are seeking that liquidity to be empowered by their responsible saving, but on top of it, to give them extra benefits like discounted fees and different types of rewards throughout their participation in the community. This is how you deliver value back to customers. This is the future of finance. and you're not going to get a toaster from your bank. You're actually going to get a strong discount. You're actually going to get a relevant fee or a relevant reward reduction when you're redeeming your loyalty points. This is the future. And I think People's Reserve is raising the bar. And most people who understand that this is a financial revolution are well in support. And I appreciate all those messages out there. So thank you to everybody for that.
Very interesting. Pure fire as always, CJ. Lot to think about there.
Yes.
I mean, are we entering a free era of money and private currencies, kind of like what Hal Finney did predict early on, and kind of what happened in maybe what, the 1800s with money, or maybe a little earlier. So this has been fire, CJ.
Paul, yeah, always thoughts. Always impressed with you, my friend. And I know you're an OG Bitcoiner, so we love to hear from you.
Excited to see how you innovate, buddy. So when is it launching?
So the token sale went live on July 4th. We're halfway through, so it's been really, it's been powerful. And as soon as the token sale is complete, the platform goes live. So unlike what the rest of crypto did through their scammy ways, we are, again, resetting the bar. We're not selling tokens to build anything. We've already built it. We're selling the tokens to empower you, to boost liquidity, to kickstart the flywheel. And I think when these products get out there, as soon as the token sale is done, we're going live. It's going to be exciting because we have a long waiting list of people who are ready to take action and unlock the purchasing power of their Bitcoin without giving up ownership. You've been a responsible saver. You know you can't sell it before the transfer accelerates. And now is the time where you're finally going to get a chance to borrow against your Bitcoin, but not in a way where you can fall asleep and wake up with nothing. You might have to fall asleep and wake up and pay a higher payment. But when Bitcoin does what it's designed to do, you're going to be in a power position. You're going to be able to hand that down to your kids and to their kids. And I think that's the goal of every true Bitcoiner.
Cool. Sounds cool. Thank Cheers. You, CJ.
Thanks,
we'll see
CJ.
You soon.
We'll talk soon,
catch up soon, buddy.
Talk to you later.
Off to the lightning round.
Lightning round. You're up.
All right. Adam Back opines that the Bitcoin's market capitalization should be 200 trillion. Is he on point here or delusional?
No, I think he's totally on point. He made the point of talking about Bitcoin treasury arbitrage against the fiat system. He talked about just fiat devaluation. If you just took the current CAGR of the last, 14 years of Bitcoin existence, and you roll that into the future, you're going to get to 200 trillion. So there's so many forces pushing towards 200 trillion that it's hard to see how it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but I love how bullish Adam Back is always. At some point he'll be right, but he's always incredibly bullish. So I think he's right. I think Bitcoin is 100 times better than gold. And gold is worth 20 trillion.
Yeah.
So 200 trillion easy.
Easy.
It should be very close. It should have been closer to that, a lot closer.
It's more surprising to me how few people have adopted it already.
That's true. Well, humans aren't great at A/B testing, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-mm. Move on
All
to
right.
the next one.
El Salvador is set to host one of Latin America's tallest skyscrapers, the Tether Tower. Is this a PR stunt or is this for real?
I think it's both. I think it's a sign of the future. It's where the new money is going. And that drawing is terrible, though. I hope that it's not the actual building. And,
why not Bitcoin?
But I wonder, will it actually attract technologists and people that work in tech into El Salvador? Will it be a booming economy there around the building? I have no idea. But I think it also is a marketing stunt. I mean, what mm-hmm. isn't these days?
So. Yeah, right.
Let's move on to the next one. It's yours to read.
Is it mine to read? No, it's yours to
read.
Oh,
man, that's my. I'm the idiot. All right. Over 26,000 new Bitcoin millionaires, my bad, emerged in the first half of 2025. Is this very bullish or just an empty statistic?
No, I don't like the question. The question, I think, should be, why are there only 161,000 Bitcoin millionaires total? Right, we went from 140 to one. We got the 26,000 new.
Right,
but there's only 161,000 people out of 8 billion people that have $1 million worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, this is very slow adoption. It's, we're still in the 1%, the bomb, the S curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
you know,
still early.
Yeah.
So when you hear people talk about, like, I mean, you, if we even got 3%, 5% of the global population to adopt Bitcoin, what would the price be?
This presumably a lot higher.
This is nuts.
Yeah.
How little adoption we have.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
That's my point. Okay, so Russia said 90% of the deals were paid in local currency. So, Cedric, are they really ditching the dollar?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, I think a nation like Russia really would probably get the wake-up call when we took all their money and cut them off from SWIFT. They have a lot of reasons to. I'm not saying they're moving to Bitcoin. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying.
Right, right.
And I don't think they're actually settling gold with all these deals because they don't have refineries. They don't melt the gold down. But I think they're doing anything they can to circumvent the dollar system. And it's not even to not use the dollar. It's not to be sanctioned and all the weaponization.
Doesn't that lead to from Bitcoin? The dollar.
That it eventually lead to Bitcoin. To Bitcoin, but I do not think
from what I understand, right? They're pro mining Bitcoin now. They're pro holding Bitcoin. There's Bitcoin exchanges.
Sure.
Like,
that doesn't mean they're pro their people using Bitcoin as a currency.
Okay. 10 points.
I don't think they're that. Ah. River Exchange has completed a full proof of reserves audit, confirming that they hold 100% of customer Bitcoin. They're setting a new industry standard here. What do you think?
I think this should just be the standard. I think Strategy needs to catch up. Come on, guys. I'm wearing your shirt, and you need to prove your reserves. If River can do this, you can certainly do this. Here's all the other exchanges that have done it. I mean, this is just standard operating procedure for Bitcoiners. If, you know, we don't trust, we verify.
I don't even trust this. I think it's a great step. I like it more than not having it. It's just a point in time. It doesn't prove that they have it now. It's a point in time audit. It's a thing. I want to see it done on a regular basis by multiple parties with a lot more transparency across multiple parties so that we can do more macro, aggregation. But I think it's a great step. I think it should be an industry standard, but I don't think
hopefully we can bring back.
I love River. I like what they're doing.
The Trace Mare protocol.
Yep.
Of pulling all your coins
on January 3rd. Yeah, I love that.
And I'd love to see that get back in the
circulation. Yeah, that's kind of disappeared.
Yeah, it really.
That's kind
has.
Of a shame.
Yeah, it is kind of a shame. And you know, that was great because man, it just put a lot of pressure on these exchanges to really get their act together.
100%. You don't want to get caught with your pants down.
Mm-hmm. All right, so BBVA, Spain's second largest bank, right, is going to officially launch Bitcoin trading and custody. So do you think this is a turning point for all EU banks, or do you think this is just a BBVA?
I'm hesitant to say it's a turning point for all EU banks.
Yeah.
It's another bank taking, you know, putting their toe in the water. It's good. It's another good step. It's incremental. It's not a paradigm shift or a game changer, but. Yeah,
I understand the BBVA also has operations in Turkey, and I know that's a massive Bitcoin. So I wonder how much
that's a country that would be very interested in Bitcoin with the inflation going on there.
Yeah,
yeah,
they're totally. Like, from what I understand from friends that have traveled there, like it's all over the airports. There's Bitcoin signs everywhere. Big, you know, it's a big deal. So I wonder if that was part of the influence. Right? Is this really like an EU thing? I don't know. Is it more? An influence from the Far East.
No, I get what you're saying. That'd be interesting. And I think Bitcoin is a great fit for the Far East. So Bitcoin's for everyone. Next one. So BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF drives more revenue than its S&P 500 fund. So the Bitcoin ETF is greater than the S&P 500. Is this the financial shift beginning?
I think it is. So this is what I think is happening. First of all, I don't believe Wall Street really gets behind things until they've got a stack. We're now starting to see, and what I mean by that is that now that you've got the institutions offering Bitcoin, I think you're going to see the front wave. You're going to see the advisors, and you're going to see the analysts, and you're going to see a push towards having Bitcoin in your portfolio. and you're gonna I think it starts at the highest levels and comes down right. all the way to retail. So this is just the beginning of the wave, and I think there's gonna be a massive push over the next decade, and it'll just be as widely adopted as the S&P 500.
I had Eric Balchunas from senior Bloomberg analyst from ETF analyst from Bloomberg on the show and on the Bitcoin Matrix. And he was noting, he gave me some of the facts behind this. So this shows the growth of the Bitcoin ETFs, tremendous growth, fastest growing ETF of all time. But this also speaks to the fees. So I think the base is like 25 basis points yeah. on the Bitcoin ETF, whereas the S&P 500 fund that I think they're comparing these numbers for has a basis of like 3 basis points. Mm-hmm. So I think it shows also room for the fees to come down in Bitcoin, that it was to be extremely profitable as these funds get massive, that they're still extremely profitable and that the consumer should still benefit from lower fees. Yep. And then I bet what's even happening here, I don't buy on the ETFs too often, and I don't have, but like, I'm sure the ETF price has a baked in fee. So I'm sure there's a spread.
Yeah, there's a spread.
Right. So it's like, you're like, oh, I'm only paying 25 basis on this one, but mm-hmm. the spread on that one is 3.5. And then the other one yeah. is a lower spread.
I'm sure the basis. Trading desk at BlackRock
sure.
is feeding the fund is making all sorts of money.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. So yeah, be mindful of that.
All right. Strategy post $14 billion in unrealized gains. Is there more growth to happen here, or do you think this could turn on them?
Oh, well, there's more growth to happen if the price of Bitcoin goes up. There'll be more unrealized gains. There could be unrealized losses. I think what's most interesting here is Wall Street or the market seem to have mostly priced this in mm-hmm. Ahead of time. And that they're looking at it like it's a one-time event. So they're not going to measure it in terms of a pattern or a right. trend rate. And they're going to say, well, what was the trailing 12 quarters or 12 months. So I still think that MicroStrategy has a lot to prove to the markets around this sort of KPI or metric that we're watching.
So MNAV is still the dominant feature.
I think the ATM is still the dominant feature okay. of every time MNAV grows to 3 or 4, if he sells into that, he's the pressure on the MNAV. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how I kind of see that. So we'll see what happens there. Let's hit the next one. Congress urged to investigate Fed chair over $2.5 billion scandal. Is this time for Congress to fire Powell? I'm not aware of this.
This
scandal.
Is interesting. So he put his foot in it, basically, it sounds like, because he was being questioned. Congress was questioning him about these upgrades they did at the Federal Reserve building. And he was like, yeah, you know, it's not a big deal. We didn't, you know, it's just, you know, we're a new lunchroom or something like that. Turns out, right, it's like $2.3 billion, and it's super high-end, like luxury dining and patios, all this stuff. So the dilemma is, like, why didn't you just tell us the truth?
Right.
Why did you lie in front of Congress
or right.
play it down in front of Congress? And so actually, Pulte, the federal housing guy, is the one calling him out on it.
Okay.
So this is kind of interesting, right? I don't know if there's a connection there with all the new Bitcoin housing related mortgage stuff, but you know, it also is an interesting timing from the perspective of July being this time period where it would have been really, really nice for the administration to have interest rates much lower. This gives them more and more pressure to put on Jerome Powell and to try and drive rates down. Right. So I don't know if this is just political games or if they're really upset about how much he spent. I mean, they probably could care less.
It's immaterial in the sense of like,
right.
it's like we're running a rate of like $100 billion a day in an increase of our debt. So it's like you guys just spent $20 billion talking about it.
Yeah. So this is really just probably all about political games so that they could try and make Jerome look bad, so they can threaten to replace him, so they can try and get rates down.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you say, like, make people look bad or whatever. I can't tell if they're bringing up the Epstein thing to make Trump look bad, and that's part of the game. Like, having him say it's not for us not to talk about it gets people talking about it. Mm-hmm. Was that the actual play? Or, you know what I mean? Is it, like, reverse psychology? I have no idea.
It's just so annoying.
Time. for Congress to fire Powell. We'll see.
All right. So next, Cardone. These guys are calling the Bitcoin treasury companies the new gold rush. Is this about the new gold rush, or what is it about?
The Bitcoin treasury companies in the new gold rush? I thought they were saying Bitcoin's the new gold rush.
No, they're calling Bitcoin treasury companies the new gold rush.
Well, if you define gold rush as the latest get-rich-quick sort of, you know, overlay to something different than Bitcoin,
they also
sure.
just put, I forget how many, 100 million? Or what did they put? Just 100 million in Bitcoin on their own balance sheet?
Something I'm not like sure, but I like what they're doing with the real estate deal where they're backing the real estate issuance with like 20%. That's them and their investors, and I thought that was really awesome. But the new gold rush, Grant Cardone bets on Bitcoin treasury companies, but cautiously. Yeah, and then I think it was even, I forget who was questioning all the convertible bonds. It was Grant questioning all the convertible bonds issuance by these companies. I'll have to look into it. Grant.
Yeah, but when he was in Tampa?
No. Oh, okay. I think that was Gary.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. They are twins, so I get it. But I think Bitcoin is the gold rush. I think I think the next 10 years.
Yeah, these are the
these final 9% of sats to be released or issued.
They're financializing Bitcoin. And if they can do that to get wealthy.
All right. Metaplanet acquires an additional 22,205 Bitcoin, boosting total holdings to 15,555 Bitcoin. Much more to come. What do you make of this? All the fives. That's the Metaplanet thing, the fives.
I think it's more to come. I mean, they had like 5,000 Bitcoin in May. They're up to 15,5. I think Dylan wants to just stack as hard as goddamn possible. That kid's unstoppable, right? I mean, he's been passionate about this his whole life. He's now got the tools and the gunpowder, and I think he's going to make it happen. I think they're going to far exceed expectations. But, you know, and also you got to think about this is that there's no other way for the Japanese markets to really get access.
That's what's interesting, though. They might change the tax implications of Bitcoin spot price exposure.
Okay.
And that would be less of a moat for Metaplanet. And then there could always be competitors. Maybe MicroStrategy or Strategy buys them. So much can happen. I heard Simon, the CEO, talking about buying other businesses, non-Bitcoin businesses, maybe, and other even
to get
Bitcoin.
Access to their balance sheet.
Yeah, and maybe their cash flow. Mm-hmm. So more to come there for sure. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. We'd love to get Dylan on the show sometime.
Yeah, that'd be
let's
awesome.
Run to Q&A. Brought to you by Byte Federal. Go bank yourself. First question is from Eric V. Stacks, our good buddy in Miami. Why didn't Charles let El Salvador use Cardano? Didn't you guys watch Charles on Sean Ryan's show?
I couldn't stomach watching Charles ever again. I think that's hysterical that he thinks that Naib wanted to even use Cardano. It just seems like complete BS to
me. It's bullshit. He gets to say it unchecked. That's what he gets to do.
Everything.
Did you see what he said, though?
No.
He said that he stayed out, not because he said he didn't like the idea of any MS-13 gang members getting airdropped. And I couldn't tell from his comment whether it was airdropped Bitcoin or airdropped Cardano.
Dude,
and that he was worried about
anything.
His future negotiations with the United States government.
Sure.
And that because MS-13 is on OFAC non-compliance lists already.
But Naib cleaned
up. This guy's
up,
such a dipshit.
Naib cleaned up El Salvador prior to becoming a Bitcoin standard country.
Sure.
I mean, he was deep into cleaning up that country. So
right.
That's all BS.
I'd love to see Naib Bukele refute what he says.
Has he tweeted on it yet?
That would be fantastic. Thank you for the question, Eric. Can't wait to see you next week. This one's coming in from Francis. I'll read it for you.
Okay.
Will U.S. dollar stablecoins rug global fiat? Are they the Trojan horse? Is that what's happening?
I love this topic. I think the USD stablecoin market now, where we sit today, with having removed LIBOR and now setting rates in the United States with SOFR, we're slowly draining the euro dollar system and pushing out USDT. So we're going to have, like, if you're running a country that doesn't have a stable fiat currency, you're in deep shit. Like, the dollar is coming in an app, and you are going to lose control of your currency. So you're basically going to be a subject. You're going to British HODL today, what I was talking about, said you're going to be like the district manager of that region of the world for the dollar.
Right.
It's going to just destroy these governments that have been really poorly managing their countries. Not to say that the dollar is some miracle, but it's far better than what they've been dealing with. And then once you have a US dollar stablecoin in place in these countries, they now have a checking account that functions. That's going to lead to better savings, which is going to then immediately lead to the savings account of choice being Bitcoin.
The lesser of two evils leads to better savings because it's better money.
Yeah, they're then you have savings. You're losing 40% of your purchasing power every year, and then it goes to only losing 7%.
Right.
You're going to be able to start a Bitcoin savings.
You feel rich.
Right. And you're going to be able to start to plan for the future.
Right.
You're not going to have to play all these crazy games just to get by. So it is going to, I think this is why Genius Act, then purchase Bitcoin. Because we're going to push
the run
out,
up a price. Yeah,
we're going to push out stable coins and then we're going to run Bitcoin. And
what does that do to
if you're not taking on the dollar in your third world country?
Right. So now you're the district manager of third world country XYZ.
Yeah.
But what does that do to internal politics beyond just monetary policy or, you know, in that country? Like, how much of a colony do they become other than through the weaponization of the dollar?
So they're going to have a choice, right? So you're going to go on the BRICS system where you've got to like manage your currency against gold, or you're going to accept the US dollar stablecoin and Bitcoin. Like,
but like, let's say then your enemies hold your stablecoin. And
your
colonies, however you want to describe it. They're your best friends.
Who's your enemy?
Anyone you put your money into their economy is your enemy.
Of that country is your enemy.
But
the people of that country,
they're now subjected to you though. So I'm just saying it's an antagonistic relationship.
It's a choice.
It's a fiat antagonistic.
They chose to download the app for a reason.
But now the whole country's on that protocol, and I could just. The United States government could zap away the money.
That's true.
Of whatever you want to call them, your enemies, your colonies, like,
oh God,
like the whole country's not getting mortgages. The whole country's not getting car loans. Oh, the whole country's not getting to their savings account.
That would not be good.
Like, do you want to send us the rhodium or not? Do you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
We're going to turn off your money.
Why do you have to ruin everything?
We'll ruin everything. All right. Are there any more questions? If not, we'll roll out on that note.
No more questions.
Right. All right. Well, that was another episode of Bitcoin Center. Thanks. My name is Cedric Youngelman. This is
Paul Tarantino.
This has all been brought to you by Bite Federal. So make sure you go bank yourself, buy Bitcoin at your local Bitcoin Bite Federal ATM, and then self-custody it. That's all, folks. See you next week. 2:50 p.m. Eastern.